Welcome to the MindBeat podcast by Effective School Solutions. I'm your host, Duncan Young, CEO of Effective School Solutions.
And I'm your co-host, Lane Whitaker, Senior Director of Professional Learning at Effective School Solutions.
The MindBeat podcast is the definitive source for all topics related to school-based mental health, from sharing best practices to highlighting innovative school districts to keeping track of legislation. MindBeat is the go-to source for educators and administrators looking to implement a mental health care continuum. Together, we can make a difference in school-based mental health care and in the lives of students, families, and educators. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the MindBeat podcast. I'm Duncan Young, CEO of Effective School Solutions.
And I'm Lane Whitaker, Vice President of Professional Development at Effective School Solutions. Hey, Duncan.
Hey, Lane. How's it going? We have a great show today. We've got Fran Rabinowitz. Fran is the Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, CAPS, and really influential and amazing organization in Connecticut that she works with. We've known Fran for a while, and she's going to give us a little bit of a perspective about what's going on with respect to Connecticut education. And even if you are not a listener from Connecticut, I think a lot of the themes that she talks about are going to be very relevant on a national scale as well. But how you doing?
I'm good. So since the last time we saw each other, the last podcast, I did go to Belize. I did chicken out on the Blue Hole.
how was Belize? I was talking to someone at Belize yesterday, as a matter of fact.
It was really cool. I wasn't on the mainland. I was on the, you know, the little shelter island. So yeah. I'm going to destroy the names, but Ambergie Key and Key Calker we went to. And Key Calker is really like low key.
No pun intended.
Yeah. But I mean, like really, like they don't do motorized cars or whatever. Like you have, I shouldn't say motorized. They have golf carts, both islands. You rent a golf cart and there's drive-throughs with the golf carts. It's like it's really interesting. They don't do regular cars. You might see one or two or whatever, or a truck here and there, but it's mostly golf carts. It was adorable. I went on some really nice snorkel adventures, though.
I heard the sea life there is amazing.
It is. I didn't know. I was so ignorant. I knew about the Blue Hole, but I didn't know that there's 130 miles of barrier reef there, second to Australia.
Interesting.
So it keeps it really shallow between the barrier islands and this reef. So you can really feel confident just, you know, snorkeling and swimming. It's very shallow water. I didn't know that on my first snorkel adventure and ran into about an 8-foot shark that I wasn't trying to figure out whether or not it was dangerous or not. I just was like, oh, my God, there's a giant shark approaching me. Turns out it was a nurse shark. And the next stop on our snorkel adventure, we actually were intending to swim with them. They're much smaller. But yeah, they're harmless. But yeah, I was very impressed with all the marine life. There were some beautiful fish because of the reefs and things. So I had a very, very cool
snorkel adventures,
but didn't make it to the diving.
Yeah, I was talking to someone yesterday who didn't know where Belize was. Mm-hmm. And I described it as like if someone took a bite out of like eastern Mexico and that you could kind of tuck Belize right in there.
Yeah,
is that right?
It's in the southern tip of Mexico and borders Guatemala and Mexico.
Interesting.
Yep.
Good stuff.
It was cool. And it's actually 2 hours behind us time-wise on the East Coast because you don't realize how it curves inward.
Yeah.
It's kind of aligned with like Texas.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got
it. But I enjoyed it. I don't know. There's so many places in the world I want to go. So I maybe I'd go again, but there's other places I'd like to hit up first. But it was enjoyable.
Yeah. I wish I had something as cool to update you on since the last time we kind of did one of these podcasts, but really nothing. I went to North Carolina last week, down to Chapel Hill. That was nice. Always enjoyed being in Chapel Hill, alma mater.
Nice.
Almost like a nostalgia bomb when you go back to kind of your college town and
it's a great school
and whatnot. You realize like simultaneously things have like not changed at all and then fundamentally changed in many different ways. So it's one of those things kind of messes with your brain a little bit.
Good on you. It's very hard to get in there out of state. So good on you.
Luckily I didn't have to get in again. I just had to get on a plane and fly down. I don't think they'd be accepting me today. Right. So,
well, my little cousin's about to graduate there in May from her MBA program. And I don't know what is going on in her MBA program, but she's like, where in the world is Paige? Every time I turn around, she's in Ecuador. She's in Galapagos Islands. She's in Poland, all through this program for an MBA. So they're doing some amazing things at UNC.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, why don't we jump in? You want to kick us off with our top three list?
Thank you. I would love to do that. So this month, April, is Autism Awareness Month. So the top three for today is top three ways to celebrate Autism Awareness Month. There are so many ways, so I had to narrow it down to three. I'll say broadly, find local activities. During this month, there's going to be a lot of like music concerts, fundraising walks, public awareness events. I just think it's a really good idea to be in community with people who are on the spectrum. And when we say the spectrum, it really is a wide spectrum. We'd be surprised, you know, how many people that you would not know are on the spectrum. So it's really good to just find more, create awareness. So then I would also say in that same theme for creating awareness, number two is, you know, watch some autism themed movies, documentaries, create more awareness, get educated. And then third, I would say plan to participate in a fundraiser. There's so much that is needed for these populations. And so if you can help participate by either planning or participating in a fundraiser. Also, I would just say sort of the last thing is I used to work with kids on the spectrum who were kind of low functioning, and a lot of families really need respite care. So if that's something you're interested in supporting, so many families would benefit from, you know, being able to take a break, go on a vacation or something, even just get a night off from, you know, all of the that goes into caring for someone who is low functioning on the spectrum. So if you are interested in that, respite care would be really helpful for those people.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah. Lane, yeah. Thanks. So for the In the News today, we're going to highlight a couple of podcast episodes, both from a podcast called Plain English with Derek Thompson. This is on the Ringer podcast network. I like this podcast. I find this gentleman to be just a like pretty smart guy who talks about a wide range of things ranging from, you know, sports to medicine to trends in pop culture. And he's actually done a fair amount of things on mental health and on education. So the two most recent episodes, I'm looking at the title right now. The first one is called Why School Absences Have Exploded Across America, and really deals with kind of some of the drivers of chronic absenteeism that's going on.
And it's an epidemic.
Yeah. And it really kind of dives into not just the data, but what could possibly be going on behind the scenes. And I think his central premise, and there's a researcher from, I think, the American Enterprise Institute who does K-12 education, who's on there as well. Basically, they talk about this as more of a cultural trend, right? I mean, since the pandemic, there's been maybe a widening of the permissive window, as the one guy in the podcast refers to it. He says, like, people are like, much more likely to kind of flake out since the pandemic. You're more like, you know, not just flake out and going to school, flake out maybe in just working from home, flake out in terms of not going, you know, doing takeout versus going out to a restaurant. Church attendance, as an example, is kind of down. So all these like little communal activities that we used to do as a society are kind of decreasing. And school is absolutely a communal activity. And I think one of the other pieces here is that, you know, parents are also seeing, or kids are also seeing parents work from home. And so there's almost like a modeling where like, okay, well, maybe it's not as important if I go to school. Mom and dad are working from home. Maybe I don't have to go to school. So those rituals and routines that used to be part of kind of what happens with young people are eroding a little bit. And so, and when you get into solutioning, like a little bit of a tricky thing in terms of how you actually kind of, how do you legislate yourself out of a cultural kind of,
I'm curious too, when I used to still teach, a lot of kids who had chronic absenteeism, their parents had mental health issues and were not able to get them on the bus and get them to go through the whole morning routine. I'm wondering if that's part of it too, coming out of the pandemic. A lot of parents are experiencing some mental health issues that are just, you know, it's easier to keep you home.
Sure.
So I just wonder if that's a contributing factor.
So. I think there's no doubt that for parents, it's kind of like, is this a battle that I want to fight? My child doesn't want to get out of bed and go to school today. There's kind of...
We're worried about your kids, school shootings and other things. Sure. Like, I'd rather keep them home.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. But there's no one single causal effect. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the kind of compilation of a lot of these different things that are taking place. The other recent podcast is entitled A Psychologist Explains Four Reasons the Internet Feels So Broken. This is not specifically about mental health, but it gets into some of the psychology of how the internet is designed and how that can impact people's moods and the way that they present and interact kind of online. And so when we talk about social media as a key driver of mental health challenges, particularly with young people, I think with non-young people as well, I thought this was kind of a very interesting podcast. One of the things that stuck with me is like the incentive structure for content creators on the internet is almost designed to kind of like emphasize negativity. So there's an old like news adage
doom
that they
scrolling,
talk about.
We call that.
Doom scrolling, but also like newscasts used to say, if it bleeds, it leads. So you always, you know, when
tragedy
you go to,
porn.
Yeah, when you go to a local kind of newscast, basically it's always kind
even
of
on
like
the weather,
yeah.
even weather events.
Absolutely. And so, and so the click-through rates on identical stories, but negative headline, positive headline, the negative headline gets like a 3 times higher click-through rate than the positive headline. And so the other thing that was staggering, it said if you basically look at the amount of content a young person consumes every day scrolling through social media and you actually printed it out on like a long like papyrus, you know, scroll, it would be 300 feet long. So the height of a 30-story building, that's how much content we're consuming kind of every day. And if all of that content is negative because of the incentive structure, absolutely. How can that not affect your mood as a young people, especially if you don't kind of have
your stress
the
response.
Self-regulatory? Yeah. Yeah, it's a cortisol just kind of like pulsing through your system.
They say that you're looking, the reason why we're programmed to want to scroll is because you're also looking for like that night watchman. Like I have to make sure we're good. I have to check and make sure everything is safe. So you're constantly checking news feed. Like, are we safe? Are we good? What's going on? You know, and so that triggers that stress response.
So, and again, this is one of those things that like, how do you legislate your way out of it? How do you fix it? How do you put the genie back in the bottle, the toothpaste back in the tube? Like, all of that, all that good stuff. So anyhow, that was depressing as you know what. So
well, let's get into
on a happier thoughts. Yeah. Let's talk to Fran Rabinowitz. So
sounds good. We're so excited to have with us today, Fran Rabinowitz. Fran Rabinowitz is an accomplished educational leader. In 2017, she assumed the role of executive director at the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, otherwise known as CAPS, where she continues to impact the education landscape. Within her journey, she spent an impressive 29 years in Bridgeport, Connecticut, contributing to the educational growth and development of public schools. While in Bridgeport, she wore multiple hats, serving as a dedicated teacher, director of evaluation and research, and executive director of teaching and learning. Fran's educational journey is characterized by a steadfast dedication to fostering excellence and a deep commitment to the community she served. Welcome, Fran. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Welcome, Fran.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, let's jump right in. So I just mentioned CAPS. Would you mind sharing more about CAPS and the mission and how you became involved?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I was retiring from the Bridgeport Public Schools after serving there. I had been in Bridgeport for most of my career and then left there, went to the State Department, was associate commissioner, and then was a superintendent in Hamden, Connecticut, and then was asked to go back to Bridgeport to serve as interim superintendent, which I did for 3 years. After that, I left, retired. I was really intending to take care of my grandchildren, to be honest with you. And then someone called and said, you know, you really ought to think about the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, the executive director job. And I said, oh, you know, I don't think so. It's been all men. I'm the first woman that ever has been the executive director there. And so anyway, I applied and was successful. And it's been a 6-year journey so far. And it's been wonderful. It's an organization that does support superintendents and supports what it is they need in terms of professional development, in terms of support within their district, you know, within for issues in their district. Yes, we do that. But more importantly, we're looking for the success of every child educationally. And so whatever it takes to get there, we're involved. So I find most of my work to be at the state level in as a voice for superintendents and educators with the legislature, the governor's office, the State Department of Ed, et cetera, and to bring forward that which is really important to superintendents to bring it to the state level. Sometimes it's in agreement with the State Department of Education and sometimes not.
That's really helpful, Fran. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
So when you think about, I mean, I can't think of anyone more uniquely suited to have their finger on the pulse of what's keeping superintendents up at night right now. I mean, kind of a two-part question. What's keeping them up at night in general? And then I think more specific to the listeners of our podcast, what do you think is keeping them up at night with respect to kind of like student mental health and some of the things they're seeing there?
Yeah, I think to be honest with you, we are seeing certainly since the pandemic, we are seeing a rise in the mental health needs of children, all of our children, from, you know, elementary through high school. I don't mean every child, but I do believe that there is a need for greater and deeper mental health services following the pandemic than before, even though before we had that need as well. You know, we've really changed, I think, our focus to the whole child now. And we're seeing it as the social and emotional being of the child is foundational to the academic progress of the child. And a child needs to feel safe in the classroom. They need to feel reasonably good about themselves in order to learn at optimum levels. And, you know, there's a degree of frustration in being able to find enough mental health workers to be with our children. And also to be able to work with our teachers to have them better meet the needs of the children within their classroom in the social and emotional area. Giving them permission to do that, I think, is big. You know, we're always on the scope and sequence of academics, but giving them the permission to break free and say, how are you feeling today? Or what's really on your mind? Or that kind of thing, sure. I think is where we are today.
And making sure that those educators have like the knowledge and the skills mm-hmm. and the tools to be able to have those conversations effectively, which is something that I'm assuming many of them have not been formally trained in.
No, they're not formally trained in it. And I'll tell you something else. It is not something that you can just assume will happen. It is training on how to do that. It is it's training on how to not put a child on the defensive and, you know, try to, you know, calm things and calm children and work within that and build on the success of children. That's training. And, you know, I mean, I in Hamden and in Bridgeport as a superintendent, I worked very hard on training teachers in the social and emotional development of children and how, you know, using different things we needed to work there. And I do feel that's the crux of the matter. To be honest with you, we're never going to have enough mental health people in our schools. It's just, you know, the funding in many of our challenged districts is not going to allow that. And we've got to find other creative ways around it.
Well, you were speaking to the choir. Yep. as the VP of professional learning here, I couldn't agree more. And as much as the focus has been on the children, justifiably so, I agree that so much of our work now has turned towards teachers and preparing them not only to support students, but also to regulate their own emotions. So,
yes,
we are in total agreement there about the training of teachers and the importance of that. You mentioned earlier, when you talked about your involvement with CAPS, that a lot of it has to do with the legislature. So can you tell us how CAPS collaborates with district leaders and legislators to address the mental health needs of students in Connecticut schools?
Oh, sure. First of all, I meet with superintendents on a regular basis. They have, there are six areas in Connecticut, and there are geographic areas, and superintendents are belong to area groups, and they meet on Zoom or they meet in person. And I try to attend as many as I can because I want to make sure that I have the priorities straight for who they and what they need. And mental health has certainly come up over and over and over again as a real need. I collaborate with the co-chairs of the education committee, as well as the children's committee, and work with neighboring organizations to push things forward, such as the boards of education, the CEA, our teacher union, and our AFT. Great relationships with them. And when we can come together and move something forward, it helps tremendously. And I do think it's really important to have a good relationship with the legislature. It's fine to testify and so on and so forth, but the most important thing is to have those personal relationships where you can call somebody up and say, hey, this bill really will make a difference for our kids. Or when you're looking to where you're going to put those extra ESSER dollars or whatever, please let's look to the mental health of our children, because it is incredibly important.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges across the nation is just sustaining these programs, being able to sustain funding for these programs. So any legislature that supports that is very beneficial.
Yeah, and I do think our legislature is trying very hard to support that, to bring that forward. I think that we also, as I said before, have to spend time on yes, we need more psychologists, social workers, all of those things, but we also need to better train our teachers and in our challenge districts, put them in classrooms where they can be able to reach out to children that need that extra support. You know, I was in Bridgeport when we had no resources. It was prior to COVID. There were very few resources there. And I saw classes, first grade classes of 28 children. That is not conducive to teaching children to read or to supporting children who have been through some trauma in their lives. And how do we better support that? So, you know, I fight for smaller class sizes all the time, and certainly social emotional foundations.
Fran, we're obviously in a transitional time right now, I think, kind of with school district budgeting as kind of, you know, ESSER funds kind of sunset and districts look at how they sustain programs that they initiated kind of during the pandemic. What are you seeing in terms of best practices and examples of districts kind of doing this the right way, I guess, broadly, but with mental health specifically? Are there things that you're seeing there that could be of interest to listeners?
I would go with let's go with mental health. I think in some cases, especially in younger children and even in high school kids, sometimes they just need someone who is, you know, perhaps they're not a school psychologist, but they're working with a school psychologist. They need someone, an adult that cares about them, that can, you know, be there and listen and answer some of the questions for them and talk with them. So it's really a caring adult that I think is under the supervision of social worker, psychologist, et cetera. I also see online therapy coming forward and online partnerships with like your organization, et cetera, being able to help us to move that forward. We are never going to have, as I said, enough in-house psychologists, social workers, counselors to meet the needs. We need those partnerships.
So, you know, a lot of the issues in the school have a lot to do with stigmatization, right? About with kids reaching out for help or families looking for support. Is yeah. CAPS able to advocate, or how is CAPS addressing, you know, the destigmatization of mental health issues and normalizing that, you know, it's okay to get help? And
well, I think that we do that, and we can do that even better through addressing it with everyone who cares about the mental health of kids, letting legislators know that they have to send that message as well, letting parents know that it's absolutely okay in all of our lives. I would be hard pressed to find someone who hasn't needed some support, mental health support, at some point in their life. And I do believe that it is important for us to let our kids know by our own actions that mental health support is not in any way a stigma. And I think sharing stories, advocating with parents, especially, and certainly, I don't think you should be a superintendent if you don't believe that it's not a stigma to seek mental health. I just take that for granted mm-hmm. that you know, every superintendent is going to believe in the need for kids to have support at different points in their career, and that there's nothing stigmatizing about that. As actually, I think it's courageous to ask and understand that you need that support. And I think that we have to send that message loud and clear to all of our kids.
Fran, when you think about the evolution of school-based mental health over the last 10 years, you mentioned this kind of broader educational focus on focusing on the whole child. It seems like we are asking schools to be a lot of things now that we weren't asking them to be a decade ago, right? I mean, in the case of mental health, almost like institutions of healthcare delivery in some ways, in addition to institutions of academic delivery. How do you feel like districts are progressing kind of on that journey, and where do you see the biggest kind of gaps, the biggest areas they need assistance when it comes to like mental health care delivery?
Well, I think there are a few things there. I think districts are over the last 10 years, I think districts have become far more aware of the need for social and emotional learning, for good mental health for kids. I think that we as, or our policymakers, have been slower to come to that, slower to understand that schools are doing it all. I mean, we're meeting so many of the needs of our kids. And I remind legislators all the time that, you know, just beware of what you're putting on our teachers and on our school districts, because it's the most convenient place, so to speak, to reach children. You know, everybody has schools. All kids are in school, hopefully. And they... So it's a natural inclination. And I think you have to be aware that you're asking schools to do a whole lot. I think in Connecticut, the suburban schools and the well-resourced schools are able to do a lot of, you know, work with mental health. They can, you know, partner with you, et cetera. I think the more challenged districts, especially when this ESSER funding is going away, I'm really concerned about that in terms of how that will affect the mental health services within those school districts. We're seeing it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, on average in Connecticut, we have one school psychologist to every 475 kids. It's just, you know, we're way above what should be the national average. And that's why I think effective school solutions is so important, those partnerships to bring that in and work with school districts is the way that we have to go in the future. I'm always saying to them, I serve on a lot of boards, and I always say, we've got to break down the walls between other providers and the schools, because we're never going to have enough in the schools. And we need to open it up more to other mental health providers to help us with this.
Thinking about creative partnerships. Do you feel like those warning signs that are going off right now around, I mean, people talk about the funding cliff. I think it's really a treatment cliff too, right? For a lot of students that might not be able to continue to get services. Are those warning lights being picked up on by policymakers? Do you feel like that, you know, when you look at kind of legislature, SDE, kind of et cetera, what are you observing there? Is there kind of activity going on behind the scenes?
I do think that many are, and that's why you're seeing bills come forward to fund mental health to a greater degree. I still think that it's far away from many. Do you know what I mean? That sure. They are not zeroing in on how important this is. It's just like, you know, we talk about chronic absenteeism, mm-hmm. and you know it's horrible right now. I mean, there are so many children that are chronically absent, and I hear it talked about, but I'm not sure that we are personalizing it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And saying this is an issue for me, even though it might not be my child, it's other children, and we can't be successful as a state or as a nation unless we're minding the needs of all of our children coming forward.
Yeah, one of the.
And I'm not sure we're there yet.
Yeah, it's really one of the podcasts that we've discussed earlier on our podcast today talks about some of the root causes of chronic absenteeism, and I think the main kind of assertion there is it's kind of what we're seeing right now is a function of a broader societal and maybe cultural shift that's mm-hmm. taking place post pandemic of just folks being disconnected. And so I think the phrase that this podcast uses is like the window of permission with parents to maybe just opt out of certain things, like not just school, but like aspects of life, right? Whether it's kind of like going out to eat in a restaurant, church, and the it seems like the permission of parents to opt out has just kind of more, if that window of permission is increased by 10% for every parent, that doesn't seem like a big deal from the standpoint of an individual parent. But when you like amplify that over all of society, you get kind of these huge changes in chronic absenteeism that we're seeing. And the challenge there is if that's a cultural change, how do you legislate your way out of that? It's a very difficult thing.
It is a very difficult thing. And it's only, you know, again, it's only when you can have the personal relationships with those parents that you can kind of say, hey, listen, we can't teach if the child isn't here, and the consistency, et cetera. But I do agree with you that it is a cultural change. And I think society as a whole is disengaging.
100%. Yeah.
For sure. I mean, we can definitely agree that it's definitely a mental health issue as well as a societal issue. Having said that, are there some key priorities or initiatives that CAPS is taking to address, you know, whether it's that or some other mental health initiatives in terms of enhancing the mental health support for youth in schools?
Yes. Well, I mean, number one, we have our blueprint, which is our strategic plan for education over the next 10 years. And we talk strongly about the mental health of children. It's out there. It's available on our website. We thank the legislature for the 33 $5.7 million that they provided for mental health last year. And we continue to say, thank you very much, but we need even more than that. And so we are doing that. We also have a committee on social and emotional health of superintendents that meet on a regular basis to bring forward the priorities for social and emotional learning. And that is in partnership with the State Department. We do have a person from the State Department that attends those meetings, and they've been really wonderful in terms of being able to push forward on you know, our priorities for mental health. It certainly is a big priority in our strategic plan.
How can people in the community help support these efforts?
Well, I think what I tell legislators all the time is, I mean, what I tell superintendents all the time is legislators get tired of hearing from me. It's much more important for them to hear stories from local districts. And it's incredibly important for those communities to address the issues with their local legislators. And I was very bad at that, and I regret it today, you know, but I when I was a superintendent, I was so busy running the school district that I didn't always reach out to my legislators in the way I could have, or reach out to my community to get them to reach out to legislators. And I now know, because I'm working more at the state level, how important that is. So I'm always pushing it with superintendents. I will tell you, when I was in Bridgeport, we had a social emotional learning development program. We happened to use RULER out of Yale. Mm-hmm. And we trained every teacher, we started with our superintendents and with our principals. In 3 years, we had trained all administrators, all teachers. We had social and emotional learning throughout every school. You knew it was a priority when you walked in the door. And we then began, the parents insisted on their being trained. We trained them. And then it went out to the community where the police chief was trained, and all of our security officers, et cetera. And I think that's what needs to happen. More of that.
That's a great model. Yes, we strive for that model.
It was really showing, it was showing incredible gains. I just had a board that, I just could not live with. So I left there to move on, and I'm not sure it's still as strong. And that's the other issue. It needs to be systemic. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it needs to be, this is really important to everybody. And it's not based upon who happens to be the leader there at the time.
Yeah, it needs to be sustained, I think, like anything else.
Yes, so, I agree.
So what do you do for your free time?
Well, you know, I try to take some time to be quiet and by myself as often as I can in between meetings, just to be self-reflective. I also try very hard to find balance, to shut down my emails and go outside and walk around. I have a dog and a cat, and that helps me tremendously. I love spending time with grandchildren and my children. And I think that has helped me tremendously. I recently lost my husband just 6 weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry, friend.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And that's been incredibly hard. But it has also given me permission to, you know, I think you need permission sometimes to grieve and know that it's okay not to be happy 100% of the time. And And, you know, it's okay to be sad sometimes. And it's what you do with that sadness. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, whether it's calling a friend or it's walking the dog or whatever, those are the things that we have to, you know, we have to look to. And I think that it's important to say it's okay to be sad, but you've got to, you've also don't want to stay there. You want to find ways to alleviate your sadness.
Yeah. I read something yesterday that stuck with me. It was like a Buddhist saying that basically said happiness comes from three things. It's having, I'll see if I can remember this, people to love, something to do, and something to hope for. Mm. Right. And if you have those three things, then that's kind of like the big piece. And it sounds like you definitely have a lot of that going on through everything that you have in your life and you're working CAPS in particular.
Yes. Yes. I'm very fortunate. And I have a lot of support and love around me. And that helps me a great deal. Mm.
Well, Fran, thank you so much for taking the time today and kind of, you know, just sharing your accomplishments, your vision for CAPS and the great things that the organization is doing to really kind of impact students and student mental health across the state of Connecticut. Really appreciate you.
Absolutely. It's wonderful talking to you.
I appreciate the work that you do. I truly do appreciate it.
All right. So, Lane, what has inspired you this week?
So now that we're in April, we had a lot of rain here in the East Coast the first week of April, but now, you know, am I saying this now on a cloudy day, but we had a few nice days of sunshine. I'm really seeing how just everything is in bloom. I used to think of spring as like a pit stop on the way to summer. I started really appreciating spring a few years back, maybe about 10 years ago. And so now I just see leaves blooming everywhere. It's like, spring is here. I'm encouraged to want to be outside a lot more. I'm really doing well with my morning walks. I've walked every day this week. I spend at least an hour as soon as I wake up. So that's inspired me just to be outside more, be in nature. It's that time of year.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. So yeah, for me, I guess two things. So I've gotten back into doing yoga. I'm doing yoga once a week with my wife, which is great. So nice. We've really kind of enjoyed that. Good compliment to the pounding of the running and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so
it's
like the hot yoga. So I'm making it like three quarters of the way through. And then I'm getting like, you know, kind of quasi blacking out and kind of like taking a knee, literally and figuratively. So the other thing I'm going to say here, I'm going to give a shout out to like dogs everywhere and the stress release that comes from like hanging out with canines. Right. Mm-hmm. So shout out to my dog, Hoagie, the boxer.
Hoagie,
who is a huge mess, but like someone I enjoy. And I was actually in a meeting with a state legislator earlier this week, and they had their this individual had their dog in the office.
Yeah.
And so like I'm sitting there talking about policy types of things, and this little like a cockadoodle, like half cockapoo, half poodle,
comes
up and kind of jumps in my lap in the middle of the meeting. And it was like fantastic. I was like, this is the best meeting I've been in like a year, right? Just because I'm sitting there kind of petting a dog during the meeting. So yeah. I've kind of decided that we should try to find a way to get dogs
in the office. Yes.
Yay. Funny story. I used to work at a place where we had purchased a company on the West Coast that was the ultimate dog friendly environment. So you literally would walk into the office and there would be like, you know, like a $700 nice like Aeron like chair. Mm-hmm. And there'd be like a little dog sitting like on the chair, like in front of a computer. And so you walked out there and you're like, what is going on here?
Right? It's true. Like the oxytocin boost is huge. When I was working with teen moms, we used to have this therapy dog named Annie come in, and everybody got so excited for Annie to come. And a lot of times it's free. Like a lot of times people have their dogs are certified as therapy dogs and bring them in for free. And I was doing an admin cohort with one of our districts, and their therapy dog came in, and I was so sad for one of the administrators. They came to collect the dog and pass it on to somebody else, and she just looked heartbroken when they took the dog away. It does just show you having dogs around, having pets around. Like even on Zoom during the heart of the pandemic, you'd see like a cat jump up on somebody's lap or something, and you're like, oh, yeah.
So if you're a dog and you're listening to this podcast, just want to let you know that we appreciate you. We see you.
And, this is a dog-friendly podcast.
Appreciate that all that you do to bring love and joy to your caregivers. So Lane, great to see you. I hope you have a great rest of the week. And
you as well.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the MindBeat Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
The MindBeat Podcast is a production of Effective School Solutions. MindBeat represents the opinions of Duncan Young, Lane Whitaker, and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for informational purposes only. please consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions. This podcast should not be used in any legal capacity whatsoever, including but not limited to establishing a standard of care in a legal sense or as a basis for expert witness testimony. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions made on this podcast. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, please call the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, the SAMHSA National Helpline at 1-800-662-HELP or your local healthcare provider.